We are recording now. Okay, I say my name is Matthew White on behalf of the Samuel Proctor Oral History Program. It is July 1st, approximately 1 o'clock, and I'm here with a Mr. Jim, right? James J. O'Donnell, talking about the Panama Canal Zone on the reunion. So that's my introduction. You were telling me, you said you were involved in the union.
That's right. First off, I was going to tell you that was born in the Canal Zone.
Okay, and what year was that?
I was born in 1928.
Okay.
April the 27th.
I went
to the Canal Zone school system till I reached the age of 16. I got a job with the National Maritime Union. The man in charge that got me the job was Rene Luongi. He was a director for the NMU in Panama. What they did was supply seamen on ships. When they need an employee, Rene would get one. Well, I heard that they had hired young fellows for shipping out on the ships. Starting at 16 years of age, I applied and got the job. That was my first contact with unions.
Can I just back up a few?
Sure.
And ask you, you were born in the Canal Zone. Now, how long had your family been there?
My father came there in 1927.
Okay.
I was born in 28. And I have two other brothers that were also born there after that. I went to the Canal Zone school system all the way through the college that they have there, junior college.
Oh, okay.
Graduated in 1947 from the college. No, 49 from the college. I applied for a job with the Army, and there was two men, Phil Green and Quinby Smith, who arranged for an apprentice program that would allow the Army, Navy, and Air Force to hire individuals to do apprentice work, and then they would have qualified people to fill in at a later date. Well, the Army put out two positions. One was mechanical, one was electrical. I got the electrical job as a powerhouse electrician, worked with them going to school for four more years, I graduated, and Phil Green took me to the IBEW, International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, and I became a member. That was in 1949. 54, I believe it was. I then worked for the union as a secretary treasurer for many years.
When you worked for the union, were you full-time for the union?
No.
Or were you still maintained electrician?
Yeah.
And you worked for them?
I worked for them part, you know, in the evening.
In the evening.
On my off time. And through that job, I was eventually, when I retired, was able to get Social Security because I paid into Social Security at the same time that I was working for the government. The IBEW was formed in 1905. A lot of workers came from the United States. They were members of the union, their various unions. And they formed a coalition of all the metal trades and non-metal trades. They call themselves Central Labor Union Metal Trades Council. They had in it organizations such as American Postal Workers, the APWU, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers, Carpenters Union, Communication Workers of America, National Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, like I said, International Association of Firefighters, International Association of Machinists, American Federation of Government Employees, the Federation of Teachers, and the Fraternal Order of Police. As an example, all of those small unions, they were very small, joined together in one union called the Central Labor Union. And then they brought in all of the metal trades people, metal trades, so Central Labor Union Metal Trades Council. So I was in the IBEW, and then I became a delegate to the Central Labor Union. And after I was in the Central Labor Union for some time, I became a... they elected me to be a legislative representative, and they sent me to Washington. I was in Washington for about 3 months doing legislative work that the union wanted done. I came back and got into a disagreement with the IBEW, which they were the ones that delegated me to the Central Labor Union. And I was removed as a delegate. And at that time, the AFGE, American Federation of Government Employees, was also a member of the Central Labor Union, and the president of the organization asked me to join up with his union in addition to the IBEW, and he would make me a delegate back to the Central Labor Union, which he did. Mm-hmm. At that time, they were working for protections in the treaty, because the treaty was coming down the mm-hmm. road. And my wife and I and John Oster drew up a labor protections to be included in the treaty. And these labor protections was what I would classify as high school work. It was not really professional. And the administration under Phil Steers, the comptroller, wanted to make sure that they got good protection. And through his work with me, we were able to get Kay Ritchie to be the speechwriter mm-hmm. who put the paper into professional presentation. We divided it up into three categories of workers who would be relieved of their job, workers who don't want to leave right away to see what the conditions of work would be when the treaty came, and workers who didn't want to leave at all. Mm-hmm. And one of the benefits, some of the benefits that we had in that labor paper was that a person normally could retire with adverse action after 25 years of service at age 50. What we did was we just subtracted 2 years from everything that was in the personnel manual. Mm-hmm. So a person would be able to retire at 2 years less than 50, so 48, and 2 years less than 25, so 23. So 48 and 23, which was unheard of in the federal system. But mm-hmm. and many other things, like 2.5% for each year of service after 1979. And that was only good, 2.5% was only good for hazardous duty people, but it was accepted for us. Mm-hmm. We worked with Congressman Murphy and Congressman Flood of Congress, and Lenore Sullivan, the chairperson of the Panama Canal Subcommittee of the Merchant Marine and Fisheries Committee. They, in turn, were very helpful. And then we were told that if we get the unionists, the AFL-CIO in Washington, to approve this addendum to the treaty, Murphy, who was then became chairman of the Panama Canal Subcommittee, would allow it to be included as an addendum into the treaty. The government introduced a proposed treaty themselves the first time, and it failed. Mm-hmm. It wasn't accepted. It didn't get it voted on in the House at all. That's when Murphy produced his own suggestion of a treaty, and it would include the protections if we could get the AFL-CIO to agree with it. Mm-hmm. So all of these unions that I mentioned all had representatives in the United States, all of them backing their people down here, down in the mm-hmm. canal zone. They contacted their organization, and they in turn contacted people in Washington. And we traveled back and forth among the various members of the House trying to push this agreement. And Murphy did get it included into the treaty, mm-hmm. which was terribly beneficial for us. Then I returned to the Canal Zone and worked for the part-time for the AFGE, which I became president of.
And what year was that?
Now that I can't remember clearly. Okay.
But it was after the treaty was...
It was in the making.
It was in the making, so, yeah. You know, mid-70s-ish.
Early 80s.
Early 80s, okay.
As the president of AFGE, American Federation of Government Employees, the people who worked for the Army, the civilians mm-hmm. that lived in a town called Corundu, mm-hmm. were told that they had to get out of their quarters because the Army was having trouble with the riots in Panama, and they wanted their people housed in the canal zone. Mm-hmm. And so he told all of the people in the Corundu area that they had to vacate. They were terribly sad, mm-hmm. came to the AFGE, and we decided to fight the Army on it because we believed that money was used from a certain section of the government to build those houses, mm-hmm. and they weren't not intended for military use. Mm-hmm. That was what we believed. So we hired two lawyers and picked up $30,000 from the members, the people who were being vacated. Mm-hmm. And we went to the court in Balboa and presented our case. Betty Olson was the woman and Albert Joyce was the man, the two lawyers. And the end result was we lost the case completely. Mm-hmm. We took it to another court in Cristobal because we had people on both sides of the mm-hmm. instance who joined. And we lost there. Also, so we took it to the district court of in the canal zone, Judge Crow. And the thing that's noteworthy of that case, he said from the bench, if he could get one thing in our favor, he would rule in our favor. Just give him one thing, and we couldn't supply a positive thing that said that the housing was for the civilians. Mm. So we lost the case. So then through the newspaper, we said we were going to go to New Orleans, to the Fifth Circuit Court mm-hmm. of New Orleans. And before we got to the court, General Mabry, the man that was in charge of all the housing, called Joyce and I into a meeting and said that if we did not fight the case any further, he would concede and not evict the people. There were six people that he was going to evict. He mm-hmm. agreed. We agreed to it. There were six people who were below grade six, mm-hmm. and they felt that they shouldn't be authorized housing. Mm-hmm. So we were very pleased to be able to win that case. And we then, because of all of that, the pilots union made me an honorary pilot. Mm. It was, nothing big, but it was something. I told you about Congressman Murphy and Sullivan, and they were very good people. And the man who really helped out considerably was Phil Steers, who helped put the paper together and that he got the protection for the employees in the canal zone. And while in Washington, John McCart, he was the head of the Merchant Marine, the Maritime Unions. Mm-hmm. He offered space in his office and mm-hmm. his clerical help for us that were trying to get this paper passed in Congress. And then when I was made president emeritus of Local 14th, and that brings us up to the present date. I had finished my work with the union in 1991, and when I retired, came to the States and then mm-hmm. here in Florida and just doing nothing for the last 19 years.
I find it hard to believe you've been doing nothing.
Yeah. But it was a lot of things that we did, and it's more elaborate than I said. But there was a collective bargaining agreement that passed with that treaty. It means it would have collective bargaining in the mm-hmm. Panama Canal Company. And to get the collective bargaining, the AFSCME, the American Federation of State and County Municipal Employees, was one of the largest unions there, had Panamanians in their union. Mm-hmm. Very few Americans. Or the other unions that I was talking about, they had Americans and not Panamanians.
Mm-hmm. And which one had both?
The Brotherhood of Postal Workers, the IBB, the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers, mm-hmm. the Locomotive Engineers, Carpenters Union, Communication Workers of America, International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, International Association of Firefighters, International Association of Machinists, American Federation of Government Employees, American Federation of Teachers, and Fraternal Order of Police. The NMU had just Panamanians, and the AFSCME had just Panamanians.
Hmm.
But when the collective bargaining came, AFSCME was with the Central Labor Union. So the Central Labor Union had all of these unions to try to be spokesmen. They had more people, they won. Mm-hmm. So they became spokesmen, so we no longer had a voice talking to the governor. We would have monthly meetings mm-hmm. with the governor, and the unions would be represented there.
Mm-hmm.
And NMU got all Panamanians also. They won there by themselves, and the pilots had represented themselves, and they won. So now, until the treaty passed, they had spokesmen for NMU, spokesmen for AFSCME, and spokesmen for pilots. And if all the Central Labor Union had to go under one of those if they wanted mm-hmm. to get anything done,
mm-hmm.
which the AFSCME basically represented Panamanians.
Mm-hmm.
And NMU, basically Panamanian and pilots, just represented themselves. So that's about the story of the Canal Zone and mm-hmm. the unions.
Okay, well, can I back up a little bit?
Sure.
Ask some questions? Well, first off, even before we get to the union part, you were born in the Canal Zone, right?
Right.
And so I'd like to hear a little bit more about growing up in the Canal Zone. I mean, that's not a typical American, childhood story. So I'd like to hear a little bit about what it was like to grow up in the Canal Zone, what your memories are, what your schooling was like.
Well, the school, the Balboa Elementary School that I attended, mm-hmm. was a good, a new building mm-hmm. with all new equipment. And as I recall, I had a good time, good raising, and it was less than a block away from my house, so it was easy walking. It was located at the head of Barnaby Street, and it had three floors and a big patio in the center.
My apologies, sir. My apologies for that, sir. So you went to Balboa Elementary School. Now, did you have, understand sports were very big in the Canal Zone?
Yeah, I played football, uh-huh. baseball, softball, basketball. And it might be noteworthy to mention that in the basketball team when I was in high school, it was fast and furious and very complicated. I threw the ball in the wrong basket.
A self-goal.
I became very famous.
Oh, good.
Threw the ball in the wrong basket.
Well,
I still hear about it today.
Oh, so in the reunion, do people remind you of it?
Yeah.
Oh, excellent. Now, who did you play, though? I mean, what other high schools were there? Did you play just intramurals, or did you play?
I played archery.
Uh-huh.
I played football, baseball, basketball. And right offhand, I can't think of anything else.
That sounds like enough. Now, again, were these interscholastic? Did you play other high schools?
Cristobal High School.
Cristobal High School.
It was the junior college. They mm-hmm. had, when I was in the senior years, mm-hmm. the college would have a team, and the high school would have a team, and mm-hmm. Cristobal High School would have a team. We'd go back and forth and play each other. Mm-hmm. We'd all either ride the bus together over or ride the train.
Mm-hmm.
The train ran... when it was on the schedule of the football team, where we could use the train,
mm-hmm.
and if it's not, we use the bus.
And what position did you play on the football team?
A guard.
Guard.
Get beat up.
I was going to say that's the
on the front line.
The grunts, if you will. Yeah.
I was never a star. I was just a regular player, which they needed.
Well, how big was your graduating class?
In the junior college, it was about 125, I believe the figure was, who graduated. In the high school, I think that it was 400.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's pretty good size then.
Yeah, I believe it was 400, yeah. Uh-huh. And later on, I think it grew to 700.
Well, that's a pretty good size high school then, sounds like.
Yeah, and we moved into the new high school just after it was built.
Mm-hmm.
We had elementary school, then we went, after the sixth grade, we went to seventh and eighth at junior high.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were ninth, 10th, 11th, and 12th in high school. All the teachers, as I recall, had to have a master's degree to teach, mm-hmm. which was a higher standard than most places.
Yeah.
And as I recall the statistics, 85% of those who graduated went to college, which was very, I think, an excellent record for the school.
Yeah. Now, where did the teachers come from? So were they all recruited from within the Canal Zone?
No, all of North Americans from the up north. At that time, the system was split between white and black.
Mm-hmm.
They call them silver and gold. The silver people were mm-hmm. the non-American people.
Mm-hmm.
They're on the silver rolls. The bathrooms were for the silver people.
Now, did signs say that? Silver?
It said silver and gold. It said, never said black. To my knowledge, it never said black and white. It said silver and gold.
And that refers to?
It started when they paid the people. They paid the locals in silver.
Okay.
They paid the U.S. citizen in gold.
Mm-hmm.
That was for quite some time, many years. And then, of course, that all went out the window, no longer silver and gold. But the unions took in just, you might say, gold people.
Mm-hmm.
The AFSCME took in the silver people. The different roles. And the bathrooms were the same way, drinking fountains were the same way. That was in the younger years.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't recall the year that it went out the window.
Mm-hmm. But you remember it was during your stay.
Yes.
That it started to phase out.
And another thing was, might be interesting, when I became an apprentice, a powerhouse electrician, I was, the first job I got when I showed up to the boss, Earl mm-hmm. Best, and he said he was going to assign me to a man to work with. And he assigned me to the janitor. And he said, you work with the janitor, he'll show you what to do. I thought at the time he was joking, mm-hmm. that I was going to play along with him, but he wasn't joking. He was serious. So I became very serious learning what was mm-hmm. the janitor does. I was his helper.
And how old were you then?
Let's see, 21 years old, 21 okay. years of age. And the janitor and I became good friends. And when he would go into the silver bathroom, I would go in with him because I sticked with him like glue.
That's what your boss said. Yeah.
And the fellas who were in the bathroom, two were on a bench and one on the hopper. And when I showed up, they didn't want me in there.
Mm-hmm.
They were terribly upset that I was using their bathroom. And that you'd think that's strange, that they thought the same way about the gold people as the gold people thought about the silver people.
Mm-hmm.
So anyhow, after 2 weeks of working with the janitor, Earl Best said, now it's time to learn how to do the electrical field.
Mm-hmm.
So it was something different at that time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what year did you graduate from high school?
1947.
Now that means, because I'm a smart historian, you were there for Pearl Harbor in World War II.
Yes, I went to sea in 1944, like I told you, aboard a ship that went up and down the coast of Central America.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, by an act of Congress later on, I became a veteran. That gave me veterans service.
You were on the ship, but were you actually in the Navy?
No.
Okay, and what did you do on the ship?
First, I was an ordinary seaman, And the second one was a messman.
Uh-huh.
It was because I got so burnt on the sun that they felt that they were real compassionate. They were just having put in the mess room, delivering the food and stuff like that, and cleaning up the kitchen, which was very good for a 16-year-old boy.
Sure, sure, absolutely. So when you were there, a couple of people I've talked to have said that, you know, Pearl Harbor, you know, December 7th, 1941, was a significant day, that there's that it marked a mark for the Panama Canal Zone. And I was wondering if you noticed the same thing, or what were your memories of that time period?
Well, I can remember coming home, and my mother was in a rocking chair.
Mm-hmm.
And I told her that the Japanese had attacked Pearl Harbor. And, you know, I was all excited, and she knew all about it already. Mm-hmm. So I remember telling her about it. Mm-hmm. But that's the only real memory I have of that incident.
Mm-hmm.
I remember going to the dry docks later and seeing ships that had been torpedoed and having holes in the side.
Uh-huh.
And then in the dry docks, they were repairing them for temporary repairs so that they can go back to the States and be repaired better.
Mm-hmm.
But as to seeing things of that other nature, I didn't see anything, of course. On the ship that I was on, we used to harass the Navy crew. They had a crew of about 8 Navy fellas who manned the one gun we had on the ship. And almost every day, they would run out, get the gun ready, bring the shells out, load it up, spin the gun around, and then call quits, and put the shells away, close up the gun. And they practiced that almost every day. And of course, the crew that was on the ship would harass them.
Uh-huh.
You know, come on, you gotta go faster. You know, you're not doing it right, you know, and all this kind of stuff. Till one day we saw a submarine.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know whose submarine it was. And we never harassed those guys after that. We respected them.
Did you ever find out whose sub it was?
No.
Still don't know.
But the whole ship was on a big alert.
Yeah.
But it could have been an American ship. It could have been somebody else.
Sure, sure.
But they were sinking ships in that ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And the Caribbean as well.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You may recall.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I remember else about that ship is I did not drink coffee. I never drank coffee in my house. It was always tea.
Mm-hmm.
When I got on the ship, it was only coffee. And so they get a break every so often, and everybody would go up to where the coffee pot is, and they get a drink of coffee, and then they stay there 15, 20 minutes, and they go back to work. Well, I would go with them.
Mm-hmm.
And where I was standing was below the bridge. When the captain on the bridge leaned over and he saw me, I never really met the captain. And he says, "O'Donnell, are you drinking coffee?" And of course I was shook when the head man talked to me.
And knew your name.
And knew my name. And I said, "No, sir." And he said, "Well, this coffee break is for those that drink coffee. If you don't drink coffee, get back to work." He was joking, you know. Mm-hmm. And of course, everybody went along with that. And they said, "We'll get that son of a bitch later. We'll fix him. We'll get a cup of coffee in your hand. If he leans over, we'll tell him, go get screwed."
So, the captain.
Yeah. So we went back the next time for coffee. And of course, I had a cup of coffee. Standing by, and the captain again came on the bridge and said, "O'Donnell, are you drinking coffee?" And I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "All right, don't spend more than 15 minutes there." And of course, I was the smallest guy on the ship, the least of importance, and was getting all that attention. It was comical when I think back. But anyhow, that was things that I remember about the ship.
Now, in your earlier years, you know, high school earlier maybe, or maybe after, you said you went to junior college before you went to sea or after you came back?
I went to sea at 16, graduated from college in 1949.
Okay. During that time, did you have hobbies? Did you What did you do with your leisure activities?
I don't remember that. Having leisure activities. My mother had seven children.
Oh.
And she made sure, six of them boys. Mm. And all six boys had to work at the house. They had to sew, mm-hmm. iron, clean, wash, and do anything else that had to be done at the mm-hmm. house. And so we were always occupied doing mm-hmm. something. But I can't recall doing anything special.
Now, that's a big family. Where did you live?
I lived in Balboa.
Okay. I mean, what type of housing did you have?
We had... It's a two-bedroom house, but my father made a third bedroom on the porch of the house. And at one time, my brother Tom, Paul, mm-hmm. and I slept in two beds to put together. The mm-hmm. three of us slept in two beds. And my brother Bob had his own bed. My brother Jack and Dan had their own bed. And mm-hmm. my mother and father had their bed. So we were kind of crowded.
Yeah.
And my mother used to say, "We want you to get a good education, take care of your teeth, and get out of the house."
Oops, I had a question now. It just slipped through my mind.
That happens when you get to be 50.
Yeah, well, not yet. So that's a big family. Now, what did your parents do in the...
My father came to the Canal Zone as a boilermaker.
Oh, that's right.
And then he became a planner and estimator.
Uh-huh.
He retired as a planner and estimator. But his original job out of Philadelphia was a planner. It was a boilermaker.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, they were doing a lot of boilermaker work.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And the area needed men like that. They hired, from the United States, mm-hmm. basically all North Americans. mm-hmm. All whites.
Yeah. Just as an aside, if you ever want to take a break, you know, get a piece of candy or something. I know it can be hard talking easily, so just let me know. I can stop the tape.
Fine. I've got plenty of time.
Okay. Just thought I'd let you know. These interviews do take anywhere from an hour to an hour and a half. I'm trying to remember if there's anyone coming in here after us. I'm going to stop it. All right. We're back with Jim O'Donnell. Just need to turn it off real quick. So you pretty much stayed in the Canal Zone, except for when you're in Washington, your whole life. Until you moved out in 91, correct?
Well, that's where I lived, in the Canal Zone.
Right, that's where you lived. Yeah. So I understand that the 50s were actually a time of importance for the Canal Zone, in the sense that that's when they started to see a lot of protests from the Panamanians.
Well, as I recall, there was I can recall one particular incident when my sister came for a visit.
Uh-huh. And she had moved out, I guess.
Yeah, she was in Philadelphia.
Okay.
She had left a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
Where they were having not exactly a riot, but it was close to a riot where they had maybe 4,000 or 5,000 or 6,000 Panamanians together chanting, and the military was...
And do you remember when this was?
Yeah, Scheller Park.
I mean, when it was? I'm sorry.
I can't recall the year it was.
Okay, 50s, 60s?
In that, it probably was... maybe late 50s.
Okay.
And I drove my sister up to Ancon to show her the mass of people that were getting riled up.
Mm-hmm.
And the military was called out to guard the Canal Zone.
Mm-hmm.
And I showed her, I said, "Look at that, Marie. That's what's going to come into the Canal Zone shortly. It's going to cause a lot of problems." She says, "We've had that in Philadelphia on a regular basis."
Mm-hmm.
Took the wind out of my sail,
mm-hmm.
because I thought we were having something big. She says, "Here in the United States, we have that often."
Mm-hmm.
In the late 50s, I guess, they had a lot of trouble up there.
Yeah, well, did you, not sure about Philadelphia, but I know that starts the start of the sort of civil rights movement and other things in America. Did you keep abreast of things going on in the United States?
Say that again.
Did you keep informed about the United States? How connected did you feel?
Well, every 2 years, we had to go back to the United States for vacation. My father had a home in Philadelphia,
mm-hmm.
and we'd go back there every 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
But staying informed as a youngster, no. As a married man of 23, 25 years of age, A little bit, you know, mm-hmm. you read the news and you hear what's going mm-hmm. on and the trouble that's being involved and how civil rights is being changed. And, mm-hmm. But we were never really affected by the civil rights in the Canal Zone.
Okay. You said you read the paper. What newspapers did you read?
The Panama American and the Star and Herald. Mm-hmm.
Were they produced in the canal or?
In Panama.
In Panama. And they were English, Spanish? In what language were they?
There was both in English.
Oh, both in English.
Right. Yeah, the papers were printed in Panama, but they were basically for the Americans in the Canal Zone. Mm-hmm. And the unions used the papers to their advantage when they wanted to uh-huh. say something. They talked to the reporters who were glad to get the news mm-hmm. and were very, very helpful. Mm-hmm.
Like what? Like when you say use the advantage, like what would they just spread the word or would they?
For example, one time we wanted to get a point across about what we thought was bad conditions. Mm-hmm. And so I took an article that we produced in the newspaper printed in English, and I took it to a fellow to have it translated in Spanish, in very good Spanish. I took that back to Louis Nolan, the reporter that did a lot of the stuff for the Canal Zone, and gave him the article in Spanish and asked him if he could get it printed in Panama in Spanish, mm-hmm. which they did. Now, there's a lady who worked for the CIA, and she told me that when the article came out in Spanish, they picked it up and wanted to have it translated into English, and they reported it. Mm-hmm. They would report on anything that was said that it concerned the Canal Zone if it was in Spanish and not English.
So, well, that brings up a whole lot of questions.
Yeah.
Let me just start with the basic ones. I mean, your employer, everyone's employer that was in the union was the United States government.
Everyone yes? who was in the union was United States.
Everybody worked for the United States government.
Yes.
How was that situation? I mean, normally one doesn't think of unionized workers. They think of, you know, the railroad brotherhoods worked for the railroad.
The Canal Zone had a railroad.
Right. But you know, everybody works for the United States government. The United States government typically doesn't take well to unions. I was wondering how your union as an existence went over and what your relations were with the employers and who did you negotiate with?
Well, for example, the IBEW, the International uh-huh. Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, would talk to about once a month they would mm-hmm. meet with the governor, and they would talk about the okay. fact that health problems were not good or safety problems were not good, you know, or should be improved, and they wanted to change various regulations about mm-hmm. home leave and stuff like that. But as to actual union problems, they never really discussed those. Mm-hmm. But they didn't have. They talked about anything mm-hmm. and everything. Mm-hmm.
With the governor. Directly with the governor.
And he was very good. I mean, they were very accommodating. They treated us like we were partners. Mm-hmm. And we really had no problems in mm-hmm. About the. Yeah, we were trying to get collective bargaining. We didn't get that until the treaty came mm-hmm. around. But up to then, we would pay our dues to the union. They in turn would pay to the national. Mm-hmm. And when I joined, I became what they call an A member. Mm-hmm. And being an A member, I paid extra money. And when I retired, I got a pension from the union. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I just got a certificate from the main office, head office in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. that said I had 60 years in the union and I've been getting a pension for 20 years, mm. which is very good.
Yeah, excellent. In addition to safety concerns, what other concerns would
health,
you bring to health? Okay.
Let's see, working conditions. That's about the major things that we talked about. Mm-hmm. We really were just a bare classification of unions. We mm-hmm. were able to keep, the IBEW would be able to keep up the membership. For example, I maintain the fact that I was a powerhouse electrician.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a card that certified that.
Mm-hmm.
I could use that same card in the States when I went back. If I didn't want to stay in a bank canal, I wanted to leave and go back to the States. If I didn't do that, I would drop out of the union, have to rejoin again.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they don't want you to join their union.
Mm-hmm.
As a case in point, my father, when he retired, he went to work. He wanted to go to work. And his brother-in-law was the agent for Black Diamond Shipping Company,
mm-hmm.
which had a pier and dock in Philadelphia. When he went to work for the Black Diamond Company, you had to be a union member.
Mm-hmm.
And the union asked my father not to join the union. They would give him all the benefits
mm-hmm.
because the brother-in-law was the agent for the company.
Uh-huh.
And he did that because if he joined the union, all his children, six of us,
uh-huh.
would be eligible to join that union. If you didn't have a relative in there, you couldn't get into that particular union. So he got a lot of work and never joined the union.
Hmm.
But if you lost your union status and to go back to the States, you might not be able to get back into the union.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of these people kept the union mm-hmm. membership.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you were bringing the health and safety grievances to the governor, did it ever reach a point? I mean, that you were threatening strikes or
no,
any of the other actions that unions can sometimes take?
To my knowledge, no one ever said that.
Uh-huh.
And it was just a matter of conversation.
Uh-huh.
You know, I would tell you something, you thought it was good, we did it. If you didn't think uh-huh. it was good, we didn't do it. Or I'd ask you to look into it. You
mm-hmm.
look into it, see if you thought that should be changed.
Mm-hmm.
It was more or less a partnership.
Mm-hmm.
And the best governor that I recall was Parfit.
Mm-hmm.
He was a two-star general, but he was delegated as a civilian during the time he was governor. Very friendly to the unions, very
mm-hmm.
cooperative. And very, for example, my wife got sick, had a little cancer,
mm-hmm.
had an operation. He was there to, with cards and flowers,
mm-hmm.
to you know, saying how sorry he was, hope you get well and all that.
Mm-hmm.
A man like that, you can't hate, you know.
No, it's tough, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that was perfect. There's several good governors they had,
mm-hmm.
several very good.
Mm-hmm.
So we were very lucky that we had those type of people running the canal.
Okay. Now, going back to something you said about the woman from the CIA, did the CIA have a presence in the canal? And were you
in Panama? They had a presence.
And they through the embassy. Were you aware of them? Were they a sort of a presence in your life?
Yes, I was aware of them. Everybody was aware of
uh-huh.
them. It wasn't something that was special that I knew. Everybody
mm-hmm.
knew the same thing. I can recall a particular case. It was something similar. I was printing articles in the newspaper. I was having printed in the
mm-hmm.
newspaper articles about housing. The people were being kicked out of the house.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I would take photographs, or have the photographs taken, of some fellows who were being vacated from
mm-hmm.
their quarters, who were in the army in World War II, at the same time that General Mabry was in the army. And I would print these articles up and say, this is what General Mabry is doing to the fellow people who fought in Germany.
Huh.
And it was a real blast, you know, because
yeah.
I had the man sitting in the chair with his wife, hand on his shoulder.
See, now you sound like something of a rabble rouser to me.
And what happens was, a young lady that was my son's age told me, Mr. O'Donnell, every time you have something like that printed in the newspaper, my job is to cut it out and put it in the file. She worked for G2.
Mm-hmm.
And so she actually told me that. So
mm-hmm.
I thought that was showed you that they were interested in what people
uh-huh.
were saying, especially if it was derogatory.
Sure. Did you ever see any negative action against you for doing stuff like that?
One time, a lieutenant colonel in his office. See, I had the I was president of the AFGE, and I had army people in the union, clerical, and one time, it was reported that a lieutenant colonel said, "Isn't there some way that we can get rid of that O'Donnell fellow?" And she quickly told me, and I thought, "Well, they are." See, I worked with Pan-Canal, which is not army,
right?
And so I was doing things for the civilians in the army, so they couldn't very well do anything to me. That's.
But did they try at all? Do you know? I mean,
oh, never.
Certainly pressures that can be bought, especially if you're living in government houses.
The people that I knew of in the Pan Canal often were saying, "How's it going with that housing fight? You know, you're going to go to the courts. You know, how are you going to explain that? How are you going to pay for it?" You know, we did, and through default, we won, not because we were right. Which was a strange way to win. So there's many Pan-Canal people like me doing the same thing in the different unions. I was at the list that I read off to you. Each one of them had a leader that did something along that line.
Now, moving ahead just a little bit, you talked about being in Washington.
Yes.
How long were you in Washington?
3 months.
Oh, for 3 months?
Yes.
Talk to me a little bit about, because you're there, I think I wrote it down, you did legislative work, right?
I was a legislative representative for the Central Labor Union and Metal Trades Council, representing these unions.
Right, and talk to me a little bit more detail about what it is that you did there. I know that you said that you didn't use the word lobbyist, but it sounds like that's what you were doing, talking to congressmen about.
I actually filled out a form as to be a registered lobbyist.
You were a registered lobbyist. Okay. So tell me what, you gave me the large picture. Talk to you a little bit about the smaller picture, about what you did sort of a day-to-day or some of the steps you took.
Well, for example, I met with Strom Thurmond. Before I met with him, the AFL-CIO, the big union in Washington.
Sure, yeah.
Told me that Senator Thurmond, was very much against Catholics, very much against unionists, and he didn't like Catholics and union people. He did not like, and you were going to have a hard time. Well, we made the appointment.
May I ask, are you Catholic?
Yes.
Okay, that's I figured, but I thought I'd ask.
And we made an appointment, and I arrived, and he was very gracious. Very nice. He got up from his desk, came out to shake my hand. Of course, I was scared to death. And I said out loud, right at the start, that I am a union member and I am a Catholic, but I am here for this purpose. And he said, "I don't know why they told you such a thing, that I'm against Catholics. And it's a big lie. I have many friends who are Catholics," and so forth. He says, "My trouble is those Panamanians. That you're not representing them, are you?" I said, "No, I'm representing the employees in the Canal Zone, whoever they are." He says, "Those Panamanians should get back into the trees where they belong." And I thought that was an earth-shaking statement for him to say, but he did. Anyhow, he said he was in favor of the protection of employees, and that's what we were there for. And I met with several congressmen, Flood, Murphy, Sullivan, and they were all supporters. And they would give me tips of what to do, where to go, and very helpful. But to be a real lobbyist, I was way down in the pole, not a very good one.
No, oh, well, you only did for 3 months.
Yeah.
Do you feel that your going there was a success? That you got what you wanted?
Yes. The end result was The end result was that paper that we produced.
Sure.
Which is the real credit goes to Sears, Phil Sears, and Kay Ritchie, and John Oster, my wife. Uh-huh. They were the ones that were the only ones out of the union that really. But once it was presented, all these unions jumped on the bandwagon and got their national offices involved. Mm-hmm. And they got a lot of calls going mm-hmm. in. And consequently, the AFL-CIO supported it, paper,
right.
which is these people did that, and they did it well. And we received the benefits of it.
Mm-hmm. And now that with the benefit of, treaty was signed in 79?
Yes.
So that's, 30 years. Do you feel it was all a success and worthwhile and went well?
Well, we had nothing to do with anything other than labor protection.
Sure, well, it's just that part.
That part worked out extremely well. Mm-hmm. The employees, as far as I know, were all tickled pink.
Mm-hmm.
For example, they got 2.5% for every year beyond 79. Mm-hmm. To get that, you had to be a policeman or hazardous duty of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
And they give it to people like me mm-hmm. that it just worked as a regular job or a clerk or anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So they made extra money on their retirement, which made them very happy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, good. And as you talked about how you got along with the people above you, were the people you represented, that you represented, how did you get along with them? Were there people that worked in the canal zone that weren't members of the union, and how well did
yes,
you get along with them?
Yes, many did not belong to the union. The union was looked upon as a bad thing.
Okay.
Troublemakers.
Okay.
You know, but when one of the directors of the company mm-hmm. would stop a meeting. For example, I went to the office of Phil Steers when he was having a board meeting with the various underlings. The door was open and I walked to the secretary and I had to pass by where eye contact was made. He stopped the board meeting, told them to take a break while he could talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was flattered that he did such a thing, you know. And he would go over how far we got along on the paper and what is going mm-hmm. on, and is Kay Ritchie get done with the paper and stuff like that. And so I say I got along real well with them. They were just real, real classy gentlemen, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They just, you'd run across some that were stuck up and
sure,
you know, but the ones that I met were real good.
Mm-hmm. So who thought you were a bad thing then?
Well, none that said it out loud to me.
Oh, okay.
I knew of a case. I took a course in college when I got my bachelor's degree. It was a case in labor law.
Mm-hmm.
And the teacher, his name was Angel, last name. And I told him, when he met me, he got a job at the Pan Canal, and he was real happy in the section of lawyers. And I saw him in the cafeteria, and I was real happy, and told him, hey, you know, he says, I told him, eventually told him, that having being seen with me might be bad for him. And he said, you must be paranoid. And I says, yeah. I said, I'm telling you, you won't do too well when you are seen with me.
Mm-hmm.
And about a week later, he said, you know, you're right. They called me into the office, asked me what I was talking about with you.
Uh-huh.
So they, when you hear things like that, you do believe that they have a little, you can be a little paranoid.
Uh-huh. Well, what made you paranoid to begin with?
Well, I really don't know, except that management people were not really in favor of the union.
Mm-hmm.
And publicity in the newspaper, I guess.
Sure.
You're not going to get your name printed.
Yeah. How about your neighbors and no, friends?
All co-workers.
Co-workers? And yeah. Were they also in the union, or do they?
Some of them, half of them, I guess we'd say, but uh-huh. not all Americans joined the union.
Right.
You know, they had a union for clerical workers, mm-hmm. and They could join easily if they wanted to, but many did not. Mm-hmm. They thought that management was supposed to be one thing and workers are supposed to be another, and that twain shall not meet.
Sure. Oh, it all sounds very interesting.
Different.
Yeah, different. What was your relationship with, in terms of the Panamanians? Like, did you go out into the Panama, into Panama area for fun and recreation or work? And
my wife was from Panama. Her father was a businessman, American businessman that came down from the States and opened a business in Panama. Uh-huh. And she never was associated with the Canal Zone. But I met her and coming out of church one day and felt that might be a good gal to meet. Uh-huh. Ended up marrying her. And this December will be 60 years.
Oh, married. Congratulations.
Yes.
Well, that actually wanted to go back to that. I've heard almost nobody else mention religious life in the canal. Were there churches?
There are loads of churches. Uh-huh. I think there was almost as many churches as there was places you could buy beer and wine.
They had all denominations?
Yeah, they had one church called the Union Church. It was all those that didn't fit into some other church. Uh-huh. And then they had the Baptists, the Mormons, the Friends, Catholics, Protestants. I think they had everything.
Sounds like
Seventh Day Adventists.
Uh-huh. So who went to the Union one?
Who went to the
Union? Yeah, it sounds like they're all covered. Was there Muslims? Was there Buddhist?
No. I don't believe there was any Buddhist. If there was, I don't know of them.
Okay.
Or Muslims, I don't know of them. Uh-huh. But there was a lot of church-going, a lot of real church-going people there.
Mm-hmm. And those were on the Canal Zone property?
Yes.
And so your wife, who was coming to church, she would come onto the Canal Zone property for church?
There was no border, you know, no fence, no... You just go back and forth without any problem. Mm-hmm. And she would, she was in senior in high school, and they allowed you to go to your church on a holy days. Mm-hmm. And so she went to church on a particular holy day when I saw her and picked her up, and next thing I knew, we were married.
Now, where did she go to high school?
Same high school, Balboa High School.
Same high school as you, even though she wasn't on the Canal Zone.
Yeah, their father had to pay.
Okay.
To go. I went for free. Mm-hmm. All my education except for college was free. Mm-hmm. At the time, I paid $25 credit hour when I was in college.
Wow.
I think that's what it was.
And you went to college right there in the Canal Zone as well.
It's a U.S. government college, which is strange. You usually don't find many U.S. government colleges.
That's a good question. There's not very many.
No. On the Indian reservation, you'll find them.
Indian Reservation, and what's the name escapes me, but the deaf one in D.C., I think is run by the federal government.
Oh.
It's officially run by the federal government, I think.
Yeah.
But well, it's an odd thing.
The college, usually people don't understand that you have a government college.
Uh-huh.
I went there twice. I got 2 degrees out of them, an AA degree and an mm-hmm. AS degree, and then I went on to get a Bachelor of Science degree and a Bachelor of Arts degree. Mm-hmm. And I still don't know how to spell degree. That's a joke.
Now, what were your degrees in?
Industrial technology.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, I became a chief power dispatcher for the commission eventually. Mm-hmm. Worked my way up through the electrical field until I became the chief of the section. And it was a good job, mm-hmm. generation and transmission and distribution. Mm-hmm. And let's see what else.
Now, Balboa was on the Pacific side, right?
Right.
Okay, I'm getting good at this.
Colon, Cristobal was on the Atlantic side. Mm-hmm. The tide in Balboa could rise as much as 22 feet.
Mm.
And on the Atlantic side, at the same time, it could rise 3 and 4 inches.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the problems with the canal.
Mm-hmm.
To build a sea level canal, the difference in the tide would cause the water to flow one direction. Mm-hmm. And it would be too strong of a current. So the only way they could build the canal was due to locks.
Right.
So it was a marvelous feat that they did.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, in your specific job, what was your biggest challenge?
See, the generation was being done properly, mm-hmm. economically. Mm-hmm. Because somebody was always checking you, I had to make sure.
Sure. Okay. So we're just about at the hour point. That's about the time when people start getting a little tired, maybe. I thought I'd ask you, not to bring this to an artificial end, but just to ask you, what story would you like to tell that you think that people should know about the Canal Zone?
I think it was a paradise. It was an excellent place to raise children. Mm-hmm. It was purely socialistic, mm-hmm. with a totalitarian governor, uh-huh. but a good one. Mm-hmm. The system owned all the property, mm-hmm. all the fire stations, all the hospitals, all the schools. Everything belonged to the government. And therefore, they had complete control of everything. Mm-hmm. And let's see what else.
Now, you say it was a great place to raise children. Why is that?
Well, there was no... If you didn't work there or a dependent of a person who did work there, you couldn't stay there. Therefore, mm-hmm. you didn't have a lot of unemployed people, mm-hmm. didn't have poor people. When they got to 62, they had to retire, mm-hmm. mandatory retirement at 62. Mm-hmm. So you didn't have old and decrepit people, didn't have unemployment people. So since the government ran everything, they made sure that you were healthy, wealthy, mm-hmm. and treated well. Mm-hmm. You didn't have to do anything. They took care of you. Mm-hmm.
Now, how many children did you raise there?
How many what?
Children did you raise?
I raised 3 boys and 1 girl.
Okay. And what are they, what was their experiences like? They might have been different than yours.
They, 2 of the boys, 3 of the boys did a lot of fishing, mm-hmm. a lot of hunting. And basically that was their main sport, mm-hmm. surfing. Mm. I took 2 of my boys for a trip from Panama to mm-hmm. San Francisco, then down to New Orleans. It took 62 days to make the trip. Mm-hmm. And we visited all the countries in between. Mm-hmm. And it was noteworthy. I wrote a paper on it, mm-hmm. telling people how to do it, where to do it, when to do it, how to get your car out of Panama, what is required, uh-huh. all the stamping that you have to get, because you get one paper. Have to take it to that section over there and buy a stamp. They put it. Then they have to take that paper over to another section. They have to sign it.
This is in the Canal Zone?
No, in Panama.
Oh, okay. Oh, in Panama. Okay.
So I wrote a paper about how to take your car out of Panama, mm. and how to get out of Panama by yourself, you know, through the back and forth across the border. And it was very helpful. I wrote a journal, mm-hmm. on how to travel from Panama to San Francisco and then down to New Orleans and then put the car on the ship in New Orleans and ship the car back to Panama. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of little tricks that you have to do.
Oh, I'll bet. Where was it published?
Never was published.
Oh, it was never published. Oh, sorry about that.
The one that was on how to take your car out and uh-huh. how to get out yourself, I printed up several copies. And gave them out as to different people. And I had it on the front, what it was, and my name, mm-hmm. and the date that it was done. And the man in charge of transportation, George Vietto, mm-hmm. took the first page and ripped it off and put on, in place of it, a paper that from the transportation division, what facts you should know about taking your car out of Panama. And he left it to give to people who were leaving their car. The front page listing who did it and when was Ernie.
Oh. Maybe he helps.
So I went to see him.
Uh-huh.
I confronted him with it. He said, I thought you just did that for to give it out to people. I said, I did, George, but it was supposed to be with my name on it.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't realize that. I thought he did.
Mm-hmm. Did he put your name back on it?
No. He stopped giving it out. Library had a copy.
Okay.
I did get some recognition.
Okay, good. So I want to go back to a question. I was wondering if you saw when you're raising your you grew up in the Panama Canal Zone.
Yes.
Then your kids grew up in the Panama Canal Zone. I wonder if there's any differences that you saw in their childhoods, either better or for worse, from your childhood. Any changes in the Panama Canal Zone that had an effect?
I think they had. Really, I don't think I see a change.
Mm-hmm.
They had the same opportunities I had. And in fact, they utilized fishing more than I did.
Mm-hmm.
I concentrated a little bit more on hunting.
Mm-hmm.
But they were more outdoors
mm-hmm.
than I was.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think there was much difference. They were not the best students in the world, like I was,
mm-hmm.
and I think they're about the same. I think they had the same opportunities as I had.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Now, what did they go into? How did their careers work out?
My son Joe started out and going to junior college, and my wife was a teacher there,
mm-hmm.
and they notified my wife that Joe should take a withdrawal before they give him the grade because he's not doing too well.
Mm.
So Joe withdrew because he was too much wine, women, and song.
Yeah.
Went back next year, tried again. More wine, women, and song.
Mm.
Took a withdrawal again. Went off to Vietnam, Cambodia. Came back, wanted to go to school again and stay home and go to school. And so my wife was saying, you know, he's not going to do anything. You know, she was down on it.
Mm-hmm.
But we agreed that he should go back again if he wants to go back. Then he went from there, he went on to get his master's degree in teaching.
Oh.
So he did real well.
Mm-hmm.
But the beginning part was a lot of wine, women, and so on.
Yeah.
The second son went off and took an apprenticeship. Air conditioned, did well.
Mm-hmm. In the canal zone.
In the canal zone, with the military. My other son went to 2 years of college and then went to work for the blind to help them.
In the canal zone?
No, here in the States.
Okay.
South of us here, Bradenton.
Okay.
Where there's a dog school, Eastern.
That sounds right.
Dog school. And my daughter Mary went off to Berkeley and got her master's degree in public health.
Hmm.
My wife got her master's degree in library science.
Oh, okay. Excellent.
And I could barely get through college, 4 years.
But you had like 4 degrees.
I don't mean diddly. But I did.
Uh-huh.
And it was maximum for me.
Uh-huh.
Some people, they can float right through and easy.
Yeah. But could they keep power flowing to the Panama Canal?
Yeah. Well, that worked out well.
Sure.
I coordinated with the Panamanian Fort St. Lucie
mm-hmm.
to supply them power.
Mm-hmm.
Went to Costa Rica to look at the company in Costa Rica, see mm-hmm. how they were. Siemens had Costa Rica geared up, and they were coordinating with them. They did the work. I just got to hear it
mm-hmm.
about selling power to Nicaragua and try to ship power mm-hmm. back and forth, and the power systems were a little bit different and made it very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But we would sell and buy power mm-hmm. from each other and keep tabs of who owed what to how much. that was the responsibility of the government of Panama. It's just that we were, at the time, the bigger company.
Mm-hmm.
We just did a good, I think we did a good job. In fact, when the boss I relieved, he felt that I was going to have a hell of a time because I would not be able to fill his shoes.
Uh-huh.
I did. When I left, I felt the next guy wasn't going to be able to fill my shoes. Huh. And he did.
And he did. And when was that again? Remind me.
Yeah.
When was that he filled your shoes? When was that?
I left. I've been gone since 1991.
91. Okay.
He filled my shoes in 91.
Okay. And how do you feel things have been going since then?
Very well.
Uh-huh.
They reduced the amount of generation that the canal zone is doing, mm-hmm. because they concentrate on keeping the units running basically for the locks.
Mm-hmm.
In case a power failure happens, they want to make sure that they have backup power to keep mm-hmm. the locomotives running and the canal in operation.
Mm-hmm.
So the Panamanian government reduced the amount of customers that we used to serve. We served the whole canal zone
mm-hmm.
and supplied power to them. And when they took over all the machinery and they decided to do it a little differently.
Mm-hmm.
Where the north and the south districts were all under one person.
Mm-hmm.
When they took over, they wanted to divide it up into three persons. North, central, and south, which, in my opinion, was the wrong thing to do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have as much control. This man has all his control and he's control. You have to have somebody over him,
uh-huh.
you know, that tells him what way to do it. But that's what they did, and it worked in well for them. They did a good job.
Mm-hmm.
But they do it a different philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
Which is probably very good in case they have a power outage.
Mm-hmm.
They still will be able to supply the locks.
Yeah.
They do have a lot of power outages, too.
Do you return to Panama at all?
Well, we own property in the hills uh-huh. next to Costa Rica. So we did return, and we eventually sold it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had a son that stayed there, the air-conditioned one.
Mm-hmm.
And we went back there to visit with him, and then he died, and we had to sell his property. We were back then, but we haven't been back in the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Any plans on returning to sort of go home again? Or
I don't think so. I really believe my culture belongs here in the United States, even though I spent 64 years down there.
Mm-hmm.
It was a wonderful time. It was a wonderful... I was very lucky to be there at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't lose anything there.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have to go back to look for it.
Mm-hmm. That's very well put. And you settled in Florida?
I first went to San Francisco for a year's vacation. And it was very good. We had a good time. And
mm-hmm.
been all over visiting and enjoying ourselves, and we rented a house in Alameda
mm-hmm.
on the small island, which was very good. We liked it very much,
mm-hmm.
but when we started to look for a house to buy, prices were terrible.
Yeah, I've heard that.
In 91, well, they were very bad.
Yeah.
Some people... They say some people were paying as high as 15% interest on the money they borrowed.
Mm.
Hard to believe. And then for a one-room apartment, they wanted your eye and your teeth.
Yeah, I've heard that.
So we said that we couldn't meet that. So we came to St. Petersburg.
Mm-hmm.
They have a very nice three-bedroom, three-bath house.
Mm-hmm.
And... we've been there for 18 years, I guess it is.
Yeah.
So life has been good to me, and I'm glad I was raised in the Canal Zone, and it was a wonderful life.
Well, and I'm pretty much out of Let me just go back to my little question sheet. I kind of got away from it because you were getting to all of them anyway. I'm out of questions or things to talk about. I usually like to save a little bit of time at the end, again, for you to, if there's anything that you think we haven't gotten to that you'd like to share.
No, that's all.
Okay.
I wanted to tell you that the shaking hand is due to Parkinson's disease.
Oh.
So the voice is affected, mm-hmm. The shaking is affected. It's not a nervous condition that you are causing.
Well, no, I would never take it personally, so... Well, I hope you enjoy that. I'm going to go ahead and stop this.
Good.